You listen to the Jason Greger Show presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense. Stay within your limits. Go to gamesense.ab.ca. As Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Woodley, how you doing, my man?
I'm good. How is the city of Edmonton reacting to today's news? I just saw it myself. I was on the ice, and as I was on my way back here, I saw the Babcock stuff. So I'd be curious to hear what the reaction's been there at Jason.
No, buddy. Let's just say less than desirable, as it should be. I'm sorry. I don't... I'm all for second chances. He had a second chance. It didn't work. And nothing's changed. And the other thing is, he hasn't won a playoff round since 2013. Why the hell do people think this guy's the right answer? I don't get it.
Yeah. I'll give you one more, and I'm with you. Second chances are deserved. Sometimes they have to be earned. And I think what came to roost in Columbus, I play hockey on a weekly basis with somebody who was a part of that University of Saskatchewan team when Mike Babcock was there. And I remember the original reaction to the news in Columbus when they were talking about all the work he did to change as a person. And it was like, really? Because the place where he was supposed to be doing that work, the people that were in that locker room, don't feel like it was done. Didn't feel like anything changed at the time. And I think we saw that come home to roost in Columbus. So I think the game's changed even further in terms of what athletes are prepared to deal with. And I'm with you. I was kind of, again, don't want to like burn a man in effigy without giving him a chance, but there's been chances here, and everything I've been told by somebody who lived it and didn't live it from a very pleasant perspective. Let's put it that way. And there were plenty in that room that didn't, did not have a lot of great things about, you know, even the attempt to change the color of his stripes when he was at the University of Saskatchewan. Yeah. So, and I think Columbus paid the price for not actually doing the proper due diligence. So I'm surprised that conversation's happening again.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, I don't get it. Anyway, I know last week we talked about a little fun homework assignment for you, looking at the free agent goaltending market. Order fans are very familiar with a lot of the names on there. Ingram, Skinner, Talbot, Picker. There's lots of them that have been in Edmonton recently. But we know Connor Ingram is a pending free agent. And the list, like, obviously Sergei Bobrovsky is another name on the list. When you crunch all your numbers, Kev, what have you come up with looking at the free agent market or potential free agent market? Because a guy like Freddie Anderson, we don't know if he's going to be a free agent or not.
Yeah, I know. I mean, in that, I think you can probably say the same thing in terms of, I mean, as much as there are reports that it's headed that way, you can probably say the same thing about Sergei Bobrovsky. Like, I'll believe it when we get to July 1st and his name is still out there.
Okay.
You know, at the end of the day, like, I think there is not a lot of clear-cut upgrades out there, especially on the free agent market. Are there some projects that have shown upside? You mentioned one name a couple of weeks ago, Daniel Tarasov.
Yeah.
You know, on a expected save percentage basis last year, he finished the season right around league average, which makes him second on this list in terms of guys heading into unrestricted free agency. But if you look at it like through February 1st, he was 21st in the league. Like, he had a really great start to the season. Had never played that much in the NHL. And obviously the wheels came off a little bit down the stretch in Florida with all the injuries, you know, but he was tied neck and neck with some guy named Connor Hellebuck for the first, you know, well, I mean, you're 2/3 of a season by the time you get to February 1st. And obviously didn't finish well for him to fall as far as he did. And there were some goals down the stretch, a lot of low percentage goals that make you scratch your head a little bit, but the physical tools have always been there. And there is upside. The problem for Daniel Tarasov in Columbus was he was always hurt early in his career. And by the time he got healthy, they didn't want to risk him because of the pedigree. And I remember watching him at the World Juniors and having people sit, like, compare him to Pekka Rinne with a more refined game at that age. Like, that there are certainly a lot of goalie people around the game that thought very highly of his tools. But by the time he got healthy in Columbus, he needed waivers. And he had barely played. And so he got in a team that was trying to compete. He got stuck. He didn't play enough that they felt like they could play him. And they didn't want to risk sending him to the minor leagues because they were pretty confident they were going to lose him. So the problem is, I don't think they're looking for a project in Edmonton, and there's still a project element to him. Like, there's still refinement that needs to come in his game, and he needs more minutes. But he's that, to me, he's one of the highest upsides on the upside guys on the unrestricted free agent market. All that said, as I teased last week, Connor Ingram grades out as the best expected or adjusted save percentage relative to environment of any goalie that's on the UFA list this season. Like, you've got a guy who tops this list already. I do think, as much as the playoffs were not probably what he wanted, they didn't match the way, you know, his performance overall didn't sort of live up to even how he'd played during the season in Edmonton. You got to remember that's first. Well, not first. He had one relief stint in Nashville where he got a start, but like that's sort of pretty much his first taste, right? Yeah. So, you know, it depends on the number and a lot of other factors. I think there are more attractive names out there, not than Connor, but other upside guys potentially on trade markets and teams having to make tough decisions in terms of what happens with, you know, do they carry three? Do they risk losing a guy? But on the unrestricted free agent list, like, the top four goalies are Connor Ingram, Daniel Tarasov, by the numbers, Matt Murray in a tiny sample, and Stuart Skinner. There's your top four. And, you know, out of the other guys below it, you know, even Freddie Anderson, if he was available, I mean, the environment in Edmonton is not what it is in Carolina. And at the end of the day, it has to improve regardless. But Carolina is a tough environment in terms of high percentage of quality chances, not a lot of quantity. But if you're going to be busy and pinned in your own end, he's playing even fewer games for you than he did in Carolina. So, you know, I look at the other ones on there, Talbot, Vanacek, you know, Mrazek, Lorraine Brossoit, Sam Harrison, you know, James Reimer, Eric Comrie. Like, I like a lot of these goalies, but I, you know, right down to the numbers, none of them is a clear-cut upgrade. I think to find a clear-cut upgrade, you either take some risk in a project like Tarasov, or you've got to hit the trade market.
Yeah, well, the Tarasov one is fascinating from a Florida perspective, because you've got Bobrovsky, and now do they feel, you know, Bob obviously feels he can play for many years. So if you're if I'm Tarasov, I'm not signing in Florida till I know what they're doing with Bobrovsky.
Right. And this is where it gets interesting too, because you can say that, but if they don't sign Bob and it's July 1st, like, that's a tough decision. Cause if you sit while that game of musical chairs starts going, and you wait, you can quickly find yourself without a seat, right? So that's actually, I hadn't thought of it from Tarasov's perspective. It's actually a really tough spot to be in.
Well, I guess it is in the sense of, like, I just look at, I think Tarasov, Kevin, you've crunched the numbers. If he makes it to the free agent market, wouldn't every team in the market for a goalie be calling him?
I mean, when I crunch the numbers and say that he's the second guy on the list, he still finished right at league average, right? Like, it's not like he's right around like the 30s in the league. It's not like those numbers jump off the page. They jump off the page relative to everybody else on the UFA list, but that's more a statement of the UFA list than it is him. Now, upside, pedigree, all the things that come with it. Yeah, you know, he'd probably be early on a number of teams' list depending on the price. He hasn't had a prove it year. I don't know that last year was enough of a sample that teams are going to invest all in. And I think it's tough for him because he seemed very comfortable in Florida, and they obviously like him. But your willingness to stick around, if Bob's not signed yet and there's indecision there, you could sign and end up behind him again. So, yeah, it's a tough one. There is nothing on this list that is a slam dunk. And I know a lot of people will say, hey, can't you find me, like, next year's Dan Vladar? And I would say there are guys on this list, including Connor Ingram and Daniel Tarasov, that have that same type of upside. But my question would be, are you giving me the defensive environment that Dan Vladar had with Rick Tocchet in Philadelphia in his first year? Because that's a big part of this conversation, right? So finding the next guy is as much about fit. And, you know, again, we're talking about an Edmonton team. If you're a goalie, the goalies know what teams are going to, like, they know where it's good to play. They know what's going to help them get good numbers and where they're going to be leaned on and where they're going to be asked to carry the mail and what the market is like. If you're going in the unrestricted free agent market and you haven't even got a coach or a system in place and you're a goalie trying to make that decision, that's I mean, that becomes interesting as well. Like, what am I getting into here? What style are we playing? Do I even fit this style? And if you're a team, you'd probably like to know what system you're going to play and what types of chances you're going to live with before you pick a goalie. Because you've heard me say this a million times on this program. It's not just he's a good goalie, so he'll be a good goalie here. It very much is about fit and sort of everybody gives up chances, but what type are we giving up? And does our guy play to those strengths? Freddie Anderson's a perfect fit in Carolina. I don't know that he gets through a season like last year at Edmonton. He certainly has less chance of getting through it healthy the way he did in Carolina this year, even playing fewer games just because they spend so much more time in their own end.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. So now what about trades? Kev, you know, you look around, it's always hard to kind of predict. We haven't really heard of any goalies that could be on the move this season. So what do you think, like what path, where do you think the orders go for goaltending? Because right now they got Tristan Jarry and that's it.
Doesn't it feel like they need a proven guy? Like from the outside looking in, like there are a lot of names that I could throw at you that I think are good bets. But doesn't it feel like that locker room wants a certainty? Like, doesn't it feel like you need a veteran? And that's a short list. Like, you've got Bob on the UFA list and you've got, you know, Jordan Binnington. And again, I'd point you to environment. Are you going to give Jordan Binnington the one he got at the Olympics where he could be super aggressive and not worry about getting backdoored all day? Or are you going to give him the one in St. Louis where he's been, you know, one of the statistically worst goalies of the past season, was outplayed by a pretty good margin by Joel Hofer, who looks to have taken over the role? Because that's a name that's sort of out there because of Hofer's ascension. You know, I'm trying to think of some other names off the top of my head who could get moved. You know, I'm curious to see what happens here in Vancouver. I don't think, even if that's your Demko, like there's a risk there from injury. There's a lot of sort of indications that the hip surgery has solved a lot of the underlying problems. And it wouldn't be the first time a goalie's had a hip problem that presents itself as groins and knees and everything else because of the way that's all connected. But there's two more years left today. Now, he's the only one on that list. If indeed he were to play enough games to make himself attractive on a trade list, he's the only one that sort of transcends that this guy can win games by himself at his best. He's the top five goalie, but do you get him at his best and does he make it to the finish line healthy? Cause he's yet to do that as a number one in the NHL. So, other names you can throw at me, Jason, sorry. I'm trying to think of like, what is, we talked about Toronto. Do they trade Stolarz because they don't want to lose Hill to be on waivers?
Yeah.
Would that be an option?
Well, you look Joseph at Buffalo, Lowell. Right? Like, what about Buffalo and their goalies, right? Like, Devon Levi is going to want to play, I would think.
Yeah, but again, and you're not going to find a bigger Devon Levi fan than myself, but there's just, I mean, that's like Tarasov, even less proven, right? Mm-hmm. And probably 4 or 5 inches smaller. Like, if I'm making a bet between one and the other, you know, again, I'm a huge fan of Devon Levi, but it's going to be Tarasov. Now Levi's a cheaper ticket, and that's, you know, again, that's there are so many factors that go into it. And at the end of the day, the one that matters the most is the one you can't answer because you don't know who the head coach is. You don't know what your system's going to be. Are you going to try and play like Carolina does? Are you going to try, like, what type of hockey are you playing? Are you going to be like, I mean, Carolina is an extreme, so it's probably not fair of me. It's a little facetious to use that example. But, like, they don't give up any chances, but they give up a ton off the rush. Like, there are goalies that would just die behind that system. They couldn't handle it mentally. They couldn't handle all the rush chances. Like, I know it was a tough year statistically for all their starters, but when you adjust it for the quality they saw, if not quantity, it actually started to look a lot better. So you really need to solve that first. And I've said it doesn't matter. Like, outside of Thatcher Demko and a healthy Thatcher Demko, and that's a big presumption, there isn't anybody available that I can think of that can outperform the type of environment the Oilers ruled out on a night-to-night basis last year.
Kevin Woodley from Ingo Magazine, NHL.com. Where do you come out on Sebastian Kosa? Because, you know, there's the rumblings, oh, maybe Augustine's coming in. I still think it's Augustine plays 1 year in the minors, which, like most goalies do. Kosa gets to be the backup. John Gibson has 1 year left in his deal. Then you can kind of figure it out from there. But maybe Detroit's like, oh my God, we need a veteran backup because we have to make the playoffs this year. Where do you come out on Kosa? And, you know, is he NHL ready? Do we have any idea?
I mean, this is the challenge for me. I don't have NHL numbers, or I don't have American League numbers. And so much, like, usually you get a taste, you get a little bit, and it's hard in a small sample, but you can usually get usually get an idea. Like Connor Ingram, to go way back to when Arizona picked him up off waivers, he hadn't played a ton in the NHL, but he played enough, and I had some underlying numbers that said, you know, he was the guy to go after. They did, and they had a lot of success with him. I don't have that on Kosa. I don't have access to American League numbers. Clearside Analytics doesn't track it. And I'd be honest, Jason, I haven't watched enough video on him. I've talked to a number of goalie people around the league. Not so much about him specifically, so this isn't a Sebastian Kosa thing, but more about how well Grand Rapids defended. Because if you look at it, all their goalies had a fair bit of success. It does still feel, though, despite that, I mean, you can only play in behind the environment that's in front of you. It's not their fault that it's a good defensive environment, and he's played really well. It's hard to figure out why he seems to get passed over, and maybe that's no fault of his own. Maybe you're going to get a guy who is so motivated and just wants to, you know, like show them, shove it for not giving me opportunities earlier. I know he's a hometown guy. He's got the size. There's a ton of tools there. It would be like Devin Levi. I don't know what that answer looks like. I don't know how it translates. I don't know if it translates quickly enough. I guess that would be the biggest problem or the biggest concern, because there's going to be an adjustment. Right? Like we saw it with Stu. Like it's not usually instant. And if you're a team that's going for broke come playoff time, like you can hope, even Brandon Bussey had a lot more experience. It's probably closer to the Levi level experience, maybe even more than that, at the American League level, had success at the American League level, caught fire this year and looked like he had taken over that job. But look what happened down the stretch. He faded. Frederik Andersen, I still think we might see Bussey in game four tomorrow night, but he wasn't the guy come playoff time. And I think if they're the Oilers, aren't you kind of looking for that guy come playoff time as much as anything? And there are not a ton of examples. Joel Hofer in St. Louis, like you bring them along slowly. Sebastian Kosa may be an excellent goaltender and a perfect fit for the Edmonton Oilers, but expecting him to come in year one and be a savior that leads you to the Stanley Cup finals and the Stanley Cup championship, it just feels like a massive ask. And that would be the same of any of these guys, Dennis Hill to be, any of these sort of number threes in organizations that have to clear waivers or are on the trade market because their team doesn't necessarily view them as being part of the future and they want to get an asset for them. So it's really hard to answer the question. I can do all this. You can do all the tape work and everything and say, this guy's an NHL goalie or he has a chance to be an NHL goalie. This is a good investment. This is a good risk. There's a big step from this guy can play in the NHL to this guy's ready to carry a team through the stretch drive of a season and into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Those are two entirely different worlds. And there aren't a lot of lists on either name that definitely check those boxes.
Kev, quickly, give me your thoughts. I would start Brandon Bussey in game four if I'm the Carolina Hurricanes. What would you do?
I'm a huge Frederik Andersen guy, but I'm leaning towards what you said there, Jason. I'm kind of with you on this one. When I look at the Stanley Cup finals, as good as Andersen has been to this point, he's like minus 4.5 goals save above expected. Carter Hart's minus 3.6. Neither goalie has been exceptional. Neither starter has been exceptional. And if you're Carolina, you've got a wild card sitting there in Bussey, who, like I said, the wheels came off or they wobbled a little bit down the stretch for him. There were some struggles down the stretch that allowed Frederik Andersen to sort of take over that job, and he's been full value for it. But it looks to me when I watch, like, this is the first team that's sort of consistently outplaying, not by a huge margin, but consistently outplaying on the high danger and expected goals per game. Vegas is the first team that's outplayed Carolina, and they've got this and they look confident. They look like they feel like they're a team that can score on Frederik Andersen. The breakaways, the way they're using the dekes, the way they're stretching him out. And like, by God, it's not an all-star game, Carolina. Stop giving up breakaways like they're Halloween candy. But Brandon Bussey is a totally different look. Conservative with his initial depth, but watch, like, even I think it was the first goal in game three, pop pass behind the net into the slot, really difficult play for Frederik Andersen. It goes across the middle of the ice. It's from behind the net, but he's on his right post and he's missed his integration. He's got his shin on the post because he didn't hit it with his toe box. And to me, that's a little bit of fatigue. And because he's on his shin, he doesn't have as good a push across. He doesn't have as much coverage. They go backdoor one-timer score. I think Brandon Bussey's got a chance to make that save. You see how he goes in. As a matter of fact, there was a similar play later in the game, and he exploded off his post, got out to the top of his crease, made a relatively easy save. The question becomes, because of his aggression, he will cut off. He doesn't go, you know, angle over depth. He doesn't just stay in the middle of his net. He will come out, and he will cut you off aggressively. He will make those first saves, more of them. The question is, can you win all the battles for the second chances and loose pucks? Because they're going to be there. The other caveat, if you're Carolina and you're looking at it, is his aggression, the way he plays, that's a terrible bounce off the end boards that catches him.
Oh, God, awful.
But that's more likely given his style. Like, he is out there. And it's not, again, like, you won't see it coming down the rush, setting up conservative depth, beats his plays on his spot. But once he reads a shot, you know, he's in that one, he's shifting outside of his net, he's pushing, you know, that shot's going well wide, and he's taking himself outside of his crease rather than defaulting back to his post, right? And so that's a little bit of how he plays. To me, I'm with you. I think the changeup would be worth it, and sort of giving, as much as Vegas would have more time to prepare for the different look, I just don't know that they would make the adjustments, and I think they'd probably, you know, the other thing too is we talked about going into the playoffs about Vegas and how good they were at the dirty area, how they led the entire playoffs in sort of what I called quote unquote dirty goals, screens, rebounds, deflections, broken plays. Brandon Bussey in the regular season in totality, even after the struggles down the stretch, screens like 8 goals above expected, rebounds 4.6 goals above expected, well above on deflections. The only one where he was slightly below was the broken plays and the bounces, 18 goals on 66 chances, which is right around league average. Like, there are elements of his game that might be better suited to what Vegas is doing, and that includes the way they're working below the net and attacking below the net laterally and with pop passes back up into middle of the ice. I think Bussey's game's he's got a little more length on the breakaways too. Like, you know, when he gets spread out, he's just got more coverage than Freddie does. He's not that much bigger physically, but he's way longer in terms of his ability to extend and stretch and use his limbs. He's got a little Jakub Dobish in him, to be honest with you, like a little bit more of that type of athleticism in his game and a willingness, not initially, but once he reads shot, to get out there, be aggressive, and play that style of game. So I don't know what the right answer is, but I'd definitely be tempted to give him a go in game 4 if I'm the Carolina Hurricanes.
All right. Kev, great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jason.